Welcome to Morgan Lewis Podcast Central. This is a podcast recording from Morgan Lewis's May 1st, 2014 7th Annual Conference, Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices. Morgan Lewis partners Jed Wider and Timothy Levin chaired this 12-part in-depth discussion of U.S. and international advanced hedge fund topics focusing on manager and investor perspectives. Part 7, the revised Cayman Islands Exempted Limited Partnership Law is almost here. Jed Wider and Michael Richardson of Maples & Calder will discuss the revised Cayman Islands Exempted Limited Partnership Law. Now, on to the podcast.
Last month, the Cayman Islands passed the new legislation revising the existing Exempted Limited Partnership Law. The new legislation, the Exempted Limited Partnership Law of 2014, replaces the existing legislation in its entirety and has basically the primary objective of providing Cayman Islands partnerships with more flexibility in a number of areas that we're going to discuss, but generally bringing Cayman Islands law into closer conformity with existing laws in more commonly used onshore jurisdictions such as Delaware, for example, which is very welcome news to both private fund investors but also to fund managers. At the same time that the enactment of the Exempted Limited Partnership Law was completed, the Cayman Islands also passed new legislation in the form of the Contracts Right of Third Parties Law, which in essence officially recognizes the concept of third-party beneficiaries by enabling the enforcement of rights given to a party in a contract between other parties. Also a very good development from a fund manager and from a private fund investor perspective. So why don't we jump into some of the principal changes, and the changes are fairly numerous, but we've highlighted a number of the changes here, and Michael will lead us off with regard to those.
Thanks very much, Jed. The new law has been passed in the Cayman Islands. It's really just now being tweaked, so it's with the legislative drafting committee, and we're hoping it'll go to the governor for assent any time. There's an expression in the Cayman Islands, soon come, and that seems pretty appropriate to this law that we've all been waiting for a long time. So jumping into the first area of change, this is an area that we do have a lot of discussions with our US counterparts with and clients, and it's the enforcement of indemnities and third-party rights. And as many of you will no doubt be aware, one of the nuances of English law, which is passed into Cayman law, is the concept of privity of contract, i.e. that if you're not a party to an agreement, you cannot take any benefit from it. What the new law will do, and this is subject to the terms of the LPA, but it will specifically allow limited partners, LPAC members, and their representatives to enforce the terms of the LPA, and particularly in regard to indemnities, this is likely to be a big change. The other law that is going to be passed, or was passed, hand in hand with the ELP law, and we're expecting to come into force around the same time, is the Contracts Rights of Third Parties Law. And that will also allow third parties to a contract to have the benefit of it, provided you expressly provide in the agreement they should be able to do so. Moving on, general partner's duties. The current law requires that the general partner acts in good faith in the interest of the partnership. Now, the new law does not remove that requirement to act in good faith, but what it does do is allow the general partner to act in the interests of different parties. So what this will do is, and this goes back to, as Jed said at the start, one of the aims of these revisions is to allow greater flexibility of contract. So it will provide the general partner with greater freedom to manage its conflicts of interest. For example, when it's dealing with parallel funds, co-investment vehicles, also, for example, with regard to side letters, it will be able to take different parties' interests into account. It is important to note that that duty of good faith does remain, and that's really, we consider that to be an irreducible core of duties that the Cayman Court is unlikely to ever allow the GP to contract out of. The one difficulty that comes there is exactly what is good faith. Now, it's not a defined term under statute or case law, but it probably amounts to honesty, fair dealing, loyalty, probably not making a secret profit, that kind of thing. Now we move on to the duties of an LPAC member or limited partner. The current law, the way it is at the moment, there has been some uncertainty as to what those duties may be. And there's been a certain amount of debate surrounding the scope of the duties. And in particular, and this is a question that we get quite frequently as Cayman Council, does a limited partner on an advisory committee owe fiduciary duties to the other limited partners? And it's been a difficult question to answer. We have, I believe, in the past issued some fairly reasoned opinions on the subject, always very difficult to say with any certainty. So the new law makes this position very, very clear and states that absent any express provision in the limited partnership agreement, the limited partners on an LPAC will not owe fiduciary duties to the partnership or any other partner. This means that the limited partner on the committee will not owe any fiduciary duties in exercising any of its rights or obligations in accordance with the terms of the partnership agreement. Now, that's not to say that duties can't arise at all. Duties could be imposed, for example, by the partnership agreement or by any other agreement, for example, a document governing the actions of the LPAC. Also, potentially by some sort of conduct, a limited partner sitting on a committee could bring duties upon himself. And thirdly, our view is that the Cayman Court is unlikely to say that there are no duties whatsoever. And the duties probably, again, come down to some sort of good faith type analysis. So, for example, the duty not to make a secret profit. But that aside, the position is now clear that we can state that fiduciary duties are not owed, absent those contractual or other ways that they could arise. Choosing the general partner, this is one where, well, the current law states that one general partner has to be a Cayman partnership, a Cayman company, or a foreign company registered in the Cayman Islands. What you couldn't do, and what we are often asked to do, is to register a foreign partnership, so a Delaware partnership, as a general partner. The reason for that is that it has not been possible to register a foreign partnership as a foreign entity in the Cayman Islands. This is another area where the Cayman Islands, the drafting committee, the Legislative Assembly, have very much taken into account what we perceive to be an industry, if not requirement, certainly something the industry would like to see. And it's been passed back through the drafting committees. So the new law will allow complete flexibility on the use of a foreign partnership as a general partner. And one of the things this will do is you will no longer have the need to have an administrative general partner if you want your substantive general partner to be a Delaware partnership, for example. So the way it works at the moment is often you might have the general partner making all the substantive decisions, being a Delaware partnership, but also adding on, say, a Cayman Islands company as an administrative general partner, which is really just there to tick the box. So that will not be required going forward.
That change in particular is obviously a very important change from a structural perspective. We've always had to address the issue where specifically for a number of reasons we've structured the general partner entity as a limited partnership. That was always a hurdle in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, I think it's going to be one of the changes that is very much welcomed. It's a point to make of really all the revisions, I think. They're all changes that we certainly welcome as Cayman Islands practitioners. And they're really all changes that also we've discussed sort of over the years, really, with clients, US counsel, to ensure that the Cayman Islands ELP remains a structure that is efficient and easy to use. The next one is access to the Register of Limited Partnership Interests. The last major revision of this law was 2009. Prior to that, the register was required to be maintained at the registered office. So, for example, Ugland House, where Maples is based, is registered office to a number of partnerships. And this register with the names, the amounts of contributions, etc., of all the partners had to be kept at Ugland House. And anyone could theoretically arrive at Ugland House and demand to see this register. Now, in practice, this rarely happened. I've been practicing Cayman law for over 11 years, and I never had anyone turn up at the office asking to see it. But I think it was always something that made some people a little bit nervous that it could happen. So that the law was then changed in 2009, and is no longer required to be kept at the registered office. It's only open to inspection by other partners, so a member of the public can't just turn up and look at it wherever it is. The partners do have a statutory right, though, at the moment to review that register. So what the new law is going to do is separate this register into two different sections. And this really goes to some of the concerns that were experienced with information that some would regard to be confidential. So there'll be the register with all the names and addresses of the limited partners, and then there'll be this record which contains the amounts of the contributions of the partners. The reason for this bifurcating of the register is so that you can have different rules for the two different documents. So the rules relating to the register, i.e. the names and addresses, can be reviewed at any time by any partner. And I think that's something that's likely to always remain. I think there's certainly a view under Cayman law that you're entitled to know who you're in partnership with. However, the record, which relates to the amount of the contributions, will be a document that can only be reviewed with the general partner's consent. And I think that really goes to the view that you may have the right to see who you're in partnership with. You don't necessarily have the right to see the amount of their contributions.
So in many ways, Michael, the new law is very much more protective of an investor's confidentiality. With regard to that issue, were there any concerns by limited partners not having the right?
We have never actually had anyone say that there'd be concerns with an increase in the amount of confidentiality. Really, the concerns over the years have always been more towards a concern that some of this information might get out into the public domain. As I say, I mean, more historically, where any member of the public could review the register, that was certainly a concern. I mean, we had people saying, well, what if a journalist turned up and wanted to just take a look at all your registers? And back in prior to the 2009, theoretically that could have happened. As I say, I'm not aware of it ever happening. But no, I think we've certainly seen this be welcomed by limited partners and GPs. The next one is parties to the LPA who are not partners. And this really is to try to fix a situation where, for example, you have an investment manager who is given rights and obligations under the partnership agreement. And of course, as we said earlier, with the privity of contract issue, you would often have that entity sign the partnership agreement. But of course, what you don't want to happen is that the investment manager gets fixed with general partner liability as a result of signing the limited partnership agreement. So what this is going to do is specifically state that you can sign the partnership agreement just to take the benefits or the burden of specific provisions, but that does not mean that you'll become a partner in the partnership. Improvement to statutory clawback mechanics. This, to a certain extent, really puts in place the provisions that we, certainly in private practice, recommended to the government prior to the 2009 revision of the law. So what the current law states is that if any payment is made, any distribution to a limited partner is made within 6 months of an insolvency event, then those partners are liable to return any payment, certainly representing the contribution they made initially. And there is a statutory rate of interest as well on that. What the new law is going to do is make this much easier to have certainty for the limited partners and state that the partnership would have to be insolvent when the payment was actually made. And in fact, goes further than that, and I think, you know, possibly surprisingly to some, that it states that the limited partner would have to have actual knowledge of the insolvency in order to incur that obligation to make the repayment.
Let's just pause on that, because when I first read this, that sort of struck out to me as a bit interesting, the fact that there is now an actual knowledge requirement. Can you explain to us perhaps what the rationale was for adding in the actual knowledge qualifier?
I think the rationale behind it is to provide the sort of certainty that if a payment is made, then you know that unless you have actual knowledge, that payment's something that you're entitled to, that you can keep. I think there was a concern this was an area of uncertainty. So I think it was a question of balancing creditor rights against the desire to make the Cayman Islands and Cayman Islands structures have this degree of certainty when it comes to payments. And I suppose, you know, to a certain extent, to bring it more in line where, you know, it's fairly unusual circumstances that you would be required to claw back any distributions made.
Okay.
Those were the sort of main salient points of the revisions that we wanted to highlight for you. As you can see, there's a number of other revisions, and I'd be happy to touch on any of these in more detail if anybody would like. Jed, do you want to open it up if anyone's got any particular questions about these bullet points or anything we've talked about?
Is there a benefit to using this limited partnership structure rather than an LTD for the Cayman Master or Feeder?
I would say from the Cayman Islands perspective, in the hedge fund context, we're relatively agnostic as to what is used. And certainly in regard to the master feeder structure, there are a growing minority of partnerships. But really in the hedge fund context, it's much more in the master funds where partnerships are being used. And really a lot of the reasons for that will be more sort of onshore structuring as opposed to Cayman Islands specific reasons. And often we're seeing things like because it's the desire to take carried interest, if there's potential tax reasons, which obviously won't be Cayman-based. But I think one of the reasons where we are seeing a little bit of growth in using ELPs as feeders is to have more alignment with your onshore and offshore feeder, say where you've got a Delaware structure and a Cayman structure. And if you're using a Delaware LP as opposed to an LLC, we're seeing a bit of that as well. But from a Cayman perspective, we're fairly agnostic. I think there's another question, gentleman just down here. So did everyone hear the question? Can a partnership opt out of the clawback insolvency, the knowledge of the insolvency? You know, I think it's important to stress that all of this is there to allow as much flexibility of contracts as we can. So you could always contract to say that we will make repayments even if we don't know about the insolvency. But just that statutory clawback requirement will not kick in. There's another question at the back.
Hi, quick question about the register. So in the slide, it says that partners can inspect it subject to the terms of the LPA. But I can only assume the LPA can't prohibit or really limit that right. Or is that not the case?
Sorry, did he say, can you contract out of the right to see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of the points there, is that sort of goes to the whole concept of trying to promote freedom of contract. So the LPA could state that the partners do not have the right to do this, and the partners can contractually say that they have actually no rights with regard to reviewing the register. It's not something I've seen in a contract post-2009. We did actually have some contracts pre-2009 attempting to do that. Again, the theme running through all this is flexibility of contract and freedom of contract to agree amongst the partners the way that the partnership will be run.
The question about insolvency and the knowledge of the limited partners, how does that interact with being on LPAC, a limited partner having a representative on LPAC? Is knowledge gained through that then charged back to the limited partner?
Yeah, so I mean, it will be any sort of knowledge. So it's not clear at this stage how exactly that will work. And the only time this would come up, I guess, is where there's a dispute as to whether the clawback should be made or not. And in those circumstances, then the Cayman Court would be able to look at a number of different ways that a limited partner may have had knowledge. So it wouldn't just have had to be that the general partner has announced to all the limited partners that that it has knowledge.
What is the GP registration requirement? Is that particularly difficult for a non-Cayman GP?
We've for many years had the ability for, say, for example, a Delaware LLC to register as a foreign company in the Cayman Islands and become a general partner of a Cayman partnership. And in fact, I don't have the statistics to hand, but certainly anecdotally, probably the majority of Delaware LLCs, or certainly close to half. And the process is actually very easy. You simply file with the Cayman Islands Registrar of Companies, copy of the certificate of formation from Delaware, a good standing certificate from Delaware, copy of the operating agreement, if there is one, and a list of the officers or members of the LLC. So we expect it'll be very similar for the Delaware partnership, for example. One thing I should note is that even once this law comes into force, as soon as it gets governor's assent, they do still have to tweak those regulations for the registration of a foreign partnership. So they'll have to determine exactly what documents need to be filed. But I'm anticipating it should be fairly straightforward. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the changes, and then the ability of non-parties to the agreement to take benefit slash burden of the provision. So if you're an LPAC member but you're not a limited partner, you should still be able to take the benefit and burden of the provisions that are in the limited partnership agreement. The way this ties in with the contracts rights of third parties law that's coming in is that to the extent there are any concerns that the provisions of the ELP law don't cover a party in whatever it wants to do, or any benefit or burden, or certainly any benefit it might have, is that you can specifically opt into the contracts rights of third parties law as well with regard to those provisions.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
To listen to other panels from the 2014 7th Annual Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference, visit PodcastCentral at morganlewis.com. If you have any questions or would like more information on the topics addressed in this podcast, please contact a Morgan Lewis attorney at morganlewis.com. This podcast is provided as a general informational service to clients and friends of Morgan Lewis & Bockius LLP. It should not be construed as and does not constitute legal advice on any specific matter, nor does this message create an attorney-client relationship. These materials may be considered attorney advertising in some states. Please note that any prior results discussed in the material do not guarantee similar outcomes. Read more about Morgan Lewis and its hedge funds practice at morganlewis.com/hedgefundsresources.